Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Dave Robinson is an Irish music executive, music video director, record producer, music manager, and photographer. He started as a photographer at Rave magazine, where he took photographs of the Beatles in the Cavern Club in Liverpool, and then went on to photograph the Rolling Stones as the official photographer for their first tour to Ireland. He went on to become a tour manager for Jimi Hendrix from his first tour of the UK until just before his death. He also managed The Animals, The Young Rascals, Vanilla Fudge, Van Morrison, Dave Edmonds, Ian Dury, and Elvis Costello, amongst others. Dave co-founded Stiff Records in 1976 with his business partner, Jake Riviera. He started as managing director and started signing up The Damned, Motorhead, Elvis Costello, Nick Lowe, Tracy Ullman, Ian Dury and the Blockheads, Kirsty MacColl, The Box Tops, and many more. Hardwick Circus was formed by brothers Johnny and Tom Foster, who had a passion for making music from an early age. Their dynamic live shows and songwriting found a fan and a manager in renowned music veteran Dave Robinson. The Hardwicks, as they are known colloquially, have supported Bob Dylan and Neil Young in Hyde Park, Madness, Alabama 3, Southside Johnny and the Ashbury Jukes, Bob Geldof's Boomtown Rats, and the Blockheads. They have gigged at the legendary Isle of Wight Festival, Reading and Leeds, headlined the Yam Riot stage at Kendall Calling, and gained airplay on BBC introducing Radio 1, Radio 2, and Radio 6 music. They have thus far released three albums, namely The Borderland, a live prison album at Her Majesty's Pleasure, and Fly the Flag. Up next on Celeb Savant, discussing their journeys in the entertainment industry, how they came to be as collaborators, as manager and band, and their upcoming tour to South Africa, are Dave Robinson, manager, and Johnny Foster, lead singer, from Hardwick Circus. First of all, Dave, where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm in Luton in the UK, a town about 25 miles from London, and it's quite sunny. We're having a kind of an Indian summer, so it's attractive at the moment.
That's cool. And Johnny, where are you and how are you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. I'm in Berlin with Tom, my brother, meets a drummer. We're working on some stuff, but we usually come from Carlisle in the north of England, which is just below the Scottish border.
Okay, so let's rewind. Dave, you first. I know you've been in the industry for multiple years, multiple decades, and many iterations. So at what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the entertainment world and your hybrid journey in the space?
Well, I was about just turning 18, and I got a job as a photographer, which I developed for a year or two. And I took pictures of musicians, friend musicians at the time in Dublin, in Ireland, and they never had any money. So in order to progress our relationship, having taken the pictures, I opened a club where they could play and potentially I could be involved. And that was my beginning. So really about 19, and I've been in it ever since. So a long tooth in the music biz.
So you had the club, and how did that journey or iteration lead to managing bands? What were the next steps sort of?
Well, they had no management. The bands were starting up. Our club was the very first beat club in Dublin. I had picked up the idea in London. I'd been in London photographing for a year, year and a half. And when I got back to Dublin, there was nowhere to go. And there were quite a few musicians in little bands doing very little and not having anywhere to play. The Irish situation at the time was to have show bands, which actually was good. They were like 8-piece bands with a brass section, and they played traditional Irish music, a bit of the charts, and a bit of country and western was very popular in Ireland. And that whole Nashville kind of American thing was popular. But they were good players, so I took their pictures and meanwhile tried to work out how younger 4-piece bands like the Beatles could play in Ireland. So that was my job. So I started managing the bands because there was nobody else looking after them.
And what does it mean to be a manager in the entertainment world? What is that? What are the day-to-day bits and bobs that you need to do, so to speak?
Well, now it's very different.
Oh,
So,
yes.
if we talk about now, the music business, there's not a lot of music in it, in my experience nowadays. There's major record companies and not a lot of independent record companies. They've been bought or are being bought by the majors. The majors kind of control everything, and their attitude is very corporate. So, managing in today's level, a lot of logistics because you're involved in getting the transport, keeping the band together, keeping them in food and accommodation, finding them venues to play. If you don't get it, the job is if you can't get a big record company to look after you and invest in you, you have find it difficult to get an agent because the agent wants to have the backing of a large corporate kind of marketing campaign. He's not so keen to just get you a few gigs at a club around the corner. So you have to do a lot yourself. And Johnny and I, Johnny from Hardwick Circus, and I have formed a very good relationship. And we've been at it a while together. And we work hard on trying to uncover the world for Hardwick Circus. So South Africa is our next port of call.
We're looking forward to that. So, Johnny, heading over to you. First of all, where does the name Hardwick Circus come from? What does it mean?
So I mentioned we're from a place called Carlisle in Cumbria. And whenever we've traveled around the UK as kids or as teenagers or when we were starting to play music, people always said to us, "Where the hell is Carlisle?" You know, it's an in-between kind of place. It's neither Glasgow nor Manchester nor Newcastle. It's a big place, but you kind of miss it on the motorway. And you only, it's the kind of town where you end up by accident and you can't quite put your finger on why you've gone there.
Okay.
But we're from this part of the world and we're very fond of it. We're very fond of the scenery, the people, what it means to be from Carlisle and Cumbria. And so when we named the band, we thought, well, let's locate ourselves. Let's put a stamp on where we're from. And when you drive into Carlisle, coming down from Scotland, or coming up from London, you cross over this roundabout when you hit the town called Hardwick Circus. And so it's kind of it's a there's a pin in the map, you know. It's you can't escape Hardwick Circus as soon as you go into or you leave Carlisle. So we thought that makes sense to call ourselves after something in our hometown that everybody's aware of. And it's funny because everyone outside of Carlisle thinks, oh, that's an interesting name. There's a good story to it. I can see it's got a few connotations there. That makes sense. But then when we tell people we're called Hardwick Circus in Carlisle, you know, they think it's the silliest thing they've ever heard in their life. So, and that's luck, that's just the way it is, I suppose. But that's why we've called ourselves that. And yeah, no, it's we're Carlisle through and through, and even straight into the name as well.
Okay, so now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? You want to be in the creative world. How did that progress into the formation of the band? Let's dive into your creative process and your creative journey.
Well, I think we were in our primary school and our secondary school, there was always musical events happening, you know, extracurricular activities. So you'd finish your maths or your history class, and then they'd try and squeeze, you know, a 20-minute lesson in of music, of learning the guitar or the saxophone or whatever. And it was exciting, but for us, we never felt like you got enough. You were always taught kind of the maths or the sciences, and there was a lot of effort put into that. But we only got a glimpse of being able to play the guitar or the saxophone. So whenever me and Tom went home, having had this day at school, we'd just want to play music. We'd want to do more of that. We'd want to investigate that more and listen to more of these albums that we'd heard a taste of, or find out about these musicians or how they wrote that song or what that lyric's about or where that music came from. And so from that kind of experience at school, we got the bug for it. And you know, as soon as we'd picked up and played our first song, which was like Teenage Kicks by the Undertones or the Ramones or that kind of angsty kind of 70s punk kind of songs, we thought this is kind of what we want to do. And ever since then, me and Tom, who's my brother, who's also the drummer, we've only ever really played with each other. You know, there's never been a different formation of the band. It's always kind of been us two with our friends who have came along and joined our vision for what we think a band should be and the music should sound like. So as we went through school, we left, we avoided that kind of typical route of going to university, and it meant that, we kind of bought a van, did all the classic cliche stuff, found gigs all over the country, and played, nearly 1,000 shows up to this point in every different known venue, be it pubs, clubs, theaters, prisons, supporting other bands, festivals. And we've been lucky enough up to this point that we've been able to do that in England and in Europe, and now finally South Africa. So it's been a long journey, with Dave and with Tom and everyone in the band. But the clock's, moving fast, and we're chasing it. So we're very excited to be there.
So, Dave, how did you come to meet the band and build the relationship to partner with them?
My son decided that he wanted to maybe go into band managing. It's an early 20s kind of idea. He was a photographer also, like I started. And he was going to get a bag of fish and chips in Camden Town, which is a very musical center of London, an awful lot of small clubs and pubs. And he heard music from a pub that he knew didn't have any music, that didn't have a musical license or and he went in just to look with his camera, just to look. And he saw this group, young group, in the middle of the floor. There's no stage in the pub, playing to a small audience who weren't paying too much attention to them. And he hung around. He took a few pictures, hung around, and chatted up Johnny, who's very chatty, and found they'd come from Carlisle just that day and had actually convinced the landlord of the pub that they could they play. They convinced him, and he, Irish inevitably, Irish landlords are very key to the whole music business. And so that he found that really interesting. So he came to me the following day and said, look, they have one other gig. They've convinced another pub to play. Would you come and have a look at them? I did, and I quite liked them, and there was something about them that I thought was interesting, and they'd come from Carlisle, which I was aware of. Because having toured for many years with bands, Carlisle wasn't on the big map. Carlisle was a very small place, 400 miles from London. And I was interested. And I met Johnny's father, who had driven them down. And my son, Milo, said, why don't we become a partnership? Because your name will be good with them. And maybe, and I said, fine, I'll do it, but I don't want to do any work. I'll just advise you and you'll do the work. That was our arrangement. A year later, of having worked with the band and got things going, met all the parents, gone to Carlisle, doing all the things that a manager does, where he's trying to work out what they want and what's possible to get, he said to me, I've got an offer of a great photographic job. What should I do, Dad? He never calls me Dad unless he wants something. I said, look, I have to advise you, you should take the job. And then I realized that I was holding the baby, and the baby was Hardwick Circus. So we've been doing it ever since, up and down the country, as Johnny said. We've been to festivals, Glastonbury, played with Bob Dylan, played with Neil Young, played and supported an awful lot of people, played in very small places, very empty places, and very big places. And here we are on our way to South Africa, which is exciting us all.
Dave, so do you only at the moment collaborate with Hardwick Circus, or do you collaborate with other artists as well?
Well, I talk to friends. I've got a lot of friends from my years at it, but I only look after Hardwick Circus.
Okay, lovely. So you referenced this. I'm going to head to Johnny first, then I'm heading to you, Dave. So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to you guys for saying thank you for all the hard work that you're doing. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the experience of listening from what song one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware or if you are aware that physicals on a massive upsurge. In the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold last year, the biggest since 1990. CDs on an upward resurgence. I was reading articles earlier in the year that in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge for tax purposes, the exchange of them. And because of the upsurge of CDs, that product is back in the basket of products for that gauging purposes. And the research is showing that it's the younger kids, the teenagers, the early 20s that are diving into the physical world. And we've also got these streaming platforms that people consume music on. So, Johnny, first, what's your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Well, I think there's that yes, there's a definite shift. There's a definite pivot from people solely streaming stuff online, because there's a lack of foundation for an independent unknown band to tour in England. People are realizing that they're having to create one, and this means bands are finding their own venues to play at and realizing that the one way that they can make a pound or a dollar is actually if they have physical things, because it's the merchandise that allows bands to make any money to get to the next gig. And so that's kind of spurred on this momentum where bands are producing CDs, are producing vinyl, and people are recognizing the importance of actually purchasing the physical product to sustain bands and to allow them to continue what they're doing. So there's a definite shift in that. And I think that's really positive. So in the past, we've our first record, The Borderland, our second, Fly the Flag, and we've got an upcoming live unplugged album, which we recorded at the Pizza Express in London. So it's all of our kind of greatest hits catalogue performed unplugged, stripped back, arranged slightly differently. We're going to be putting that out on vinyl at the end of November, the 29th of November, whilst we're in South Africa. So there's a definite taste for that. And people like getting on it and reading, as you say, the sleeve, the booklet, getting involved with it on a much more personal level than, say, an included level than you can just through like digital means. So I think that's really exciting and positive.
Dave, anything to add?
Well, I like the idea that people who like the music of any given band or anything want to own the music. Yeah, I came through the period when people owned the music that they liked. So you go into a person's house, he'd be playing his collection to you, and would DJ for you from his collection. Streaming to me was all very well, but it seemed to be more corporate. It seemed to be paying larger corporate entities than it was dealing with people loving the music. So your dad pays a few quid a month, and you can have the entire world's catalog at your beck and call. But it passes too quickly through your mind. You don't, as you said, you don't, you can't read, you can't physically feel the vibe of the music. And so, having come through the 60s, 70s, and 80s, 90s, and onwards, when people, bought the music they liked, Mick Jagger met Keith Richards by having a blues album under his arm when on the train, and that's how they actually connected. And that's another remarkable story from the human musical jungle. And so that's what I got into. Major record companies, I would just like to say, started as distributors and manufacturers, and they only started putting out their own music because the independents, who normally worked through their factories, when they had a hit, they would probably celebrate and go abroad, go to an island, the Mystique or somewhere, and have a good time, and they wouldn't do any more work till they came back. So the majors thought, well, our factory needs to work regularly, so we'll have our own record label. And now, what do they distribute? What do they manufacture? Nothing. A couple of files to Spotify, Apple Music, whatever. They're having a great time, and they collect all the money. So it's a small beer whether they will pass some of it on to you, even if you're on their label. Elton John gets paid, but does the smaller band and the smaller songwriter, which we're dependent on. The songwriting is my interest and has been always. So how does he earn and have a living from his ability to write? That's my question.
It's interesting because I think there's also a lot of education that needs to be transmitted through to the fans, because a lot of people who maybe buy streaming albums, streaming artists, they're not necessarily, they go to a concert here and there, they're sort of not like diving deep fans. But in fact, even the diving deep fans aren't aware of the situation. I was chatting with a few people a couple of days ago, and I said to them, I said it was about seven or eight people who love music in different aspects or different facets. And I said to them, If an artist gets 100 million streams of a song, how much money do you think they get? And they said to me, oh, 50 million. I said, it's actually like $1,000. And they were absolutely shocked. They didn't realize the situation. So I think there's a lot of education that needs to be happening to the listeners as well.
Very good point. That's absolutely true. Very good point. Because the majors don't spend any time telling people how their operation works. It just works well. It's like King Gillette. I always think King Gillette, who his big quote was the fact that he made all his money during the nighttime when he was asleep, all because that's when men's hair grew,
It's a big illusion, because the majors push this idea, this propaganda that the internet's there and it's accessible for everybody on a very even level. And so they say this, and it kind of lets them off from actually doing any more fucking work, because it's like you can do it yourself. This is democratic. It's democratized music, but it hasn't. It's done the opposite. It's basically got rid of any responsibility they have to find music and to push it from all sorts of areas that's kind of musically interesting, and just focus on a few centerpieces that they want to push that fits their agenda. So everyone's being conned, and not just the artist, but the listener as well.
This is an interesting conversation. So now, Johnny, what do you enjoy about performing live?
Well, I think that's what it all builds around. If we're not gigging, that's why we've done so many. We go a bit stir crazy. We don't really know what to do with ourselves, and that's why we played so many gigs, some big ones, some small ones, because not only does it kind of release this energy that we need to get out of our bodies, but musically it's so important for us as a band. We've always pushed this idea that we're like a five or six piece with six very individual musicians all contributing in their own way. There's no track we're playing to. We're reliant on six people's 100% all the time, because it pushes us forward into different directions. And that's where kind of the magic happens. And you only get that if you're on the road. And by the road, I don't just mean being on the stage. It's that journey. It's that traveling together. It's finding that camaraderie from spending all your time with these people and kind of, finding each other funny, finding each other annoying, listening to different types of music and pushing forward. That's a crucial element. And without that, it becomes kind of a bit of a sterile mission. And, I don't want to be a part of any of that,
And let's dive into the creative process. So when you guys create a song from 0 to 3 to more, 4 minutes in creating a song, is it easy every time? What motivates it? What invigorates it? How does that creative process work for the band?
Well, me and Tom do a lot of writing, and we're, people always say you're brothers, you must hate each other. Which we do at times, but broadly speaking, it's quite a healthy relationship because it means we can talk very plainly and very honestly with one another creatively. So, I'll write 70% of a song, Tom will write 70% of a song, and then we'll kind of come at each other and say, oh, here, I've got this idea. What do you think? And we can confidently say, oh, that's great, or that's fucking terrible. You need to sort that out, or you need to change this bit, or why don't we do this, or put this song into that area. And so we've created this kind of healthy environment where we can be very honest with each other and not feel like we need to paint it up too much as to not offend the person. So that's great. But we write very differently, Tom's started out playing the drums, and he began writing only a couple of years ago, but through kind of a steer determination, he's really become a great writer. And he can't really play the guitar that much, but he's got an iPad and he can use the computer a bit. And he's got very kind of a vivid mind that he's quite good at putting down electronically, and creates these kind of interesting songs because he doesn't really know the chords and he doesn't really know what he's doing. And that's so special because it means that he's being really fluid. He's not overthinking anything. And that's a place you're always trying to get to as if you're creating something. So we've got a good relationship in that sense. And, yeah, no, there's a we've been going through a lot of songs for this new album at the moment. There's been kind of 70 that we've whittled down to 15 that we're in the process of recording. Tom's written an awful lot of them, and no, it's an exciting time.
And this album you referenced, that will be coming out
Yes, it will be. Not until next year.
next
Not
year,
until April, May next year. We're in the process of recording that, which is really exciting. Some of our best songs yet, and It's me and Tom singing all right the way through them together. So hopefully we'll have a song out though towards Christmas or in the new year.
Okay, cool. So you referenced this, so you guys are going to be in South Africa shortly. So Dave, tell us about the visit, the tour, what's going to be happening?
We're supporting several South African bands, and we're doing I think three or maybe four in Johannesburg, and three in Cape Town, and there's a little gap in the middle where we're going to have a day off. So, so the idea is we're supporting bands who we're unknown in South Africa, but we want to be known. So several of the bands have agreed to have us support them. And that's fantastic because they will draw an audience and we'll get to play in them. We found that that's the way forward generally because music fans hopefully will come early. They'll have a beer and they'll settle down to this is what the band does well. This is what the band does very well. We are Hardwick Circus are great. When I say we, I'm meaning all of us, but they are a great live band. And the experience of coming from Carlisle is such that it's like a little bit of a bubble. It's where they're not in London. Most bands in London are playing a similar kind of music, possibly, or they're influenced by other bands, or there's there's that kind of on the scene kind of thing. Carlisle is fairly far away, so the stuff that they like is different to other bands, and that's what we major in. That's what we major in. And in terms of the shows, when you talk to Johnny next, I'll drag them up. I should have had them in front of me, and I'll let you know what they are because that's obviously very important.
Johnny,
Yeah, I've got I've
carry
you
on.
have
Go ahead.
I've got them here. Yeah, so
Okay, good man. Good man.
we're starting on the in Johannesburg at the Railway Centurion on Thursday the 21st. On
Okay.
to Friday the 22nd, we're at Baileys Bedford View
Yep.
Jayburg
Yes.
with Shadow Club and Betty's Nuclear. On Saturday the 23rd, we're at Sonage,
Yes.
Strindon Park, Johannesburg. On Sunday the 24th, we've got a day of leisure. We're going to a recording studio then. And then on Wednesday the 27th, we're flying to Johannesburg. On Thursday the 28th, we're at District Harrington Street, Cape Town, supporting the Springbok Nude Girls, who I hear are a well-known entity over there. Very excited for that. They've got some great songs as well. Me and Tom were listening to them very for the last couple of weeks. Friday the 29th, we're at the Balboa Bar in Stellenbosch. And then on Saturday the 30th, we're at the Brass Bell, Cork Bay in Cape Town, supporting the Springbok Nude Girls. And then we fly back to England. So we're kind of skitzing around a little bit, but we're so excited to do it. Also, we're very ginger, So ginger and pale. So being in this kind of 35-degree heat is terrifying, Tom, slightly.
So, guys, I'm going to ask you each a question. One of you is going to have time to think. Dave, you first. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 20 minutes, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five songs by artists, other artists, what would those five songs be and by whom?
Oh,
Well, Well, there would be definitely a Bob Dylan song in there. There would probably be a Bruce Springsteen song. Al Green would feature. I very like Al Green. I play him a lot. There'd be some reggae. There'd probably be Bob Marley, obscure Bob Marley or something, and there'd be a Hardwick Circus song. So there
there
would
we
be
go.
my five. Walking on Broken Glass is my favorite Hardwick Circus, and written by Tom and Johnny, and I think it's a cracker. And a few people in South Africa have commented on it, so I think that's well worth noting.
Yes, I
Johnny,
agree with
yes,
that.
you agree. Johnny, you're five.
Oh, I'd say Wichita Lineman, Glen Campbell. Definitely a Bob Dylan song, maybe What would I say?
Highway 61 would be
Highway 61 would be a sensible shout. I'd say Tupelo Honey by Van Morrison. I'd say, God, probably, probably a Springsteen, maybe The River by Bruce Springsteen. And number five, what else would I say? God, it's a really hard question. Maybe, like In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning by Frank Sinatra,
Lovely.
because that's a good excuse to have a whiskey. So.
So I love this game. So thank you for reminding me some of those songs. Because I know if I literally had to ask you this question now again, you'd both have different answers. So thank you for that. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the listening audience, Dave, first, what would you like to say?
Well, we're talking obviously about South Africa and getting there. We're all very excited, as we've said many times. The idea of going to South Africa is rare because we've had to look for sponsors to get the airfares and hotels together, and we're still looking for a few. A few. There might be a few people out there who think that would be worthwhile, and we want to come back. The idea we have is to tour. That what we have done in England is play smaller venues and then play slightly bigger venues and hope that the precipitation with the audience means that they're going to tell their friends and they're going to think that it's good. We work on it a lot. We're very, very professional workers. An awful lot of rehearsal goes into it. And I think the songs that the band have come up with now are probably the very best. So we're looking for the new album, probably in March, to hopefully find a place in South Africa, perhaps, with our introduction on this tour. Thank you very much for having us.
Thank you. Johnny, any final message?
No, we look forward to seeing everybody there, and all the dates are listed on our website and on our Instagram and on our Facebook. So do get in touch. We've had a couple people already saying they're coming down to see us, which has really been amazing. So keep that up.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.